Wake up! Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to You and Me at 30. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I realize that you could be anywhere in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I sincerely appreciate that. You and Me at 30 is a new talk show airing on Sunday mornings. I'll be bringing you lively, thought-provoking discussion on a variety of topics. Each show will feature an extended conversation with a guest. While many of these individuals will come from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and the local community, I will also feature several guests from around the country. Please note that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. Women's History Month is an annual declared month that highlights the contributions of women to events in history and contemporary society. It is celebrated during March in the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia in conjunction with International Women's Day. My guests this morning are four dynamic women in higher education. They are Dr. Tracy Luke, an associate professor at the Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication at Iowa State University, where she teaches courses on news editing and journalism history. Dr. Jane Marcellus, a professor at Middle Tennessee State University, where she teaches media history and cultural studies. Dr. Erica Engstrom, professor of communication studies at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And Dr. Kimberly Voss, a tenured associate professor of journalism at the University of Central Florida. Interesting tidbit, both Dr. Luke and Dr. Voss are graduates of the University of Maryland College Park, which isn't too far from our location right now. Ladies, thank you all so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us. Happy to be here.
So in 2014, the four of you co-edited a book on the popular AMC television series Mad Men, which was titled Mad Men and Working Women, Feminist Perspectives on Historical Power, Resistance, and Otherness. How did each of you define feminism, and what was the inspiration for this collaborative project?
Well, I would say, this is Jane Marcellus, I would say feminism is simply the idea that women and men are equal human beings. It's not a radical idea at all. And the inspiration was we all knew each other from conferences, and we put together a panel for fun, and then Erica said we should do a book, and we did.
Yeah, I would agree. This is Tracy Luke. I define feminism as a belief in the fundamental equality of people of all gendered and sexual identities, a recognition that inequities exist, and also a determination to do the work of fixing those inequities.
This is Kim Voss. I would agree with what my co-authors said. I think the challenge sometimes is the baggage that feminism comes with, right? The term is sometimes considered to be negative in some way or anti-men. And I think that's a big challenge right now. I know a lot of my students, they believe in feminism as a concept, but the term is problematic for them. And so I think that's why Mad Men resonates, right? Because we're still working through some of these concepts.
This is Erica Engstrom. In addition to the idea that female humans are also humans, feminism is a way to achieve equality for all beyond gender. So if our goal is to establish a society in which all human beings are treated equally with the same dignity, then feminism is a way to get there. And in addition to working on this project together, we are the authors of the book ourselves. So each of us wrote two chapters, and then those chapters became our book.
So what was it about Mad Men that made you all want to write about this topic? Because there's several television shows that you could have chosen.
Well, we were all fans. We all enjoyed watching it. And in addition to the beautiful way it was produced, it was very thoughtful in terms of presenting various ways of looking at society. And we were concentrating mainly on how the program portrayed women in a sympathetic light. So they were often portrayed as being harassed or abused, but we saw it as a way that the program's producer, Matt Weiner, was actually being sympathetic toward women and actually presenting a pro-feminist, pro-woman program.
The title of the show is Mad Men, but it's really as much about the women as it is about the men.
in the Sterling Cooper ad agency that it followed during the 1960s.
Right, right. I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say some of our listeners may have never seen an episode of Mad Men. I know the show no longer comes on the air. So what can you quickly just explain what the show's about and give a summary of some of the major characters who are in it?
Sure, I can do that. This is Jane Marcellus. So it's set in the 1960s. It begins in 1960. It's about an up-and-coming New York advertising agency and the people who work there and their lives. So the main character is Don Draper. He's sort of a ladies' man with this mysterious past that we learn about over the course of the show. Other characters are his wife, Betty, his secretary, whom he promotes to a copywriter. Her name is Peggy Olson. Joan Holloway is the head secretary, who becomes also much more professionally involved in advertising. And she's the character who's objectified by men in the office a lot. Other characters are Roger Sterling, who's Don's boss and also his friend. And then Pete Campbell, who is a kind of rich boy nemesis of Don, who is sort of an interesting character. So we learn about all their lives through the course of the 60s.
How accurate is the show in its depiction of working women and housewives in the 1960s?
This is Kim. I would say that in the workplace, it was probably actually worse than what you see in the show, which seems difficult looking through today's lens, but I think it was actually worse if you read the oral histories and the stories of the women then in the workforce. I would say from Betty's standpoint, what it was like to be a housewife was probably pretty typical from the standpoint that you didn't have much outside of the walls of your home.
This is Tracy. One thing that I really appreciated about the show was, while it does show the pervasive sexual harassment and discrimination that women faced, it also gave each of its female characters an amount of agency and gave us a glimpse into women's strategies and ways of navigating what was often a very hostile work environment. And the fact that it allowed women that kind of character development and showed especially the characters of Peggy and Joan in a very complex way, I really appreciated that aspect.
You mentioned those two characters, Peggy Olson and Joan. Can you talk a little bit more about those two characters in particular? Because, and also Betty, too, because like each of them really represented, you know, like a different image of what the woman was dealing with in the 1960s. I remember there was an episode where Joan, I believe it was, was asked to sleep with an executive from Jaguar in order to win in an account. And, you know, that episode always really stood out to me. And then also I think about Peggy and how she evolved from the very first episode where you see her to where she is later in the series. And then also Betty's evolution, too, going from her marriage with Don to a new marriage. So can you all just talk briefly about those characters?
Yeah, absolutely. I can start by talking about Joan and Peggy, because one of my chapters in the book looks at the two of them and their representation of different feminist discourses for white women during the 1960s. I argue that Joan Holloway, who, as Jane said, is the most objectified woman in the workplace, at least as she's shown on that show, she also represents what might be called the Cosmo Girl version of feminism that was popularized by Helen Gurley Brown, the editor of Cosmo, who took over that magazine in 1965, who wrote that it was okay for women to have professional aspirations, it was okay for women to be single, and that they should view their sexuality and their performance of gender as an asset, and that it could be used to get them ahead. And Joan is a pretty great embodiment of that. Of that discourse, whereas, as you mentioned, Peggy Olson represents what I would consider a more liberal feminist type of discourse, in that she wants to rise on her own merits. She wants to be seen as the equal of men. She gets a job as a copywriter, which, as Joan tells her, you know, that's a man's world. You know, I've never wanted to do that job. You're going to have to find your own way. And so I like how the show depicts those different pathways that were available at the time. This is Kim, and I will follow up talking about Betty, because I think she made the most of the limits
they were placed on her, right? He was portrayed as this horrible mother in many ways, although Don Draper gets a free pass at any kind of parenting, that Betty went to college and wanted to do things, but she was kind of limited by her social class, right, and the expectations placed on women at the time. And then after her second marriage, as she is getting sick, she's going back to school. And that was so much of that time period. If you look at the 1970s in particular, you had women went to college, had their children, stayed at home for a while, and many of them were really recruited to go to college then as older women. It sounds kind of quaint now, but they used to be called displaced homemakers.
Hmm.
And most major colleges were recruiting these women to go back to college or finish their high school degrees in some ways in the hopes that they would go into the workforce or become professional volunteers. But there was a place for women, and I think Betty really kind of embodies that.
One of the things that I really liked about the Mad Men DVDs, which I used to collect. I know people don't really buy DVDs anymore. But on the DVDs, they used to have special features which would go into more detail about things that you were watching in the show. And as a historian, I really find it interesting because they would give a lot of history behind some of those episodes. And one thing that I found that was striking, and maybe you all could just explain this to the listeners, they talked about the rights that women had in marriage during that time period, as well as like the rights that working women had as well, as far as sexual harassment and different things. And, you know, for our listeners, maybe a little younger, can you just give them an idea of what type of rights, if any, you know, a married woman had in her household, and what type of rights a woman had at the workplace as far as sexual harassment was concerned?
For one thing, there was no term sexual harassment.
Okay.
Now, the term was coined in the 70s.
Okay.
And so there really wasn't a way to talk about those issues going on. Sometimes men were called the office wolves. So agreed upon language to talk about being harassed in the office. And then women were paid less, and of course, we still don't have equal pay, but it was, you know, it was legal until the Equal Pay Act, and so that was going on. And then I also think that something that's not really thought about is that a woman's credit, her right to buy a house, her right to kind of manage her own money, while it was certainly better than it had been, you know, 50 or certainly 100 years earlier, a woman's credit was tied to her husband's. And so, you know, a woman, like my own mother, was a secretary, and she was very diligent, and she always paid the bills, but, you know, her credit wasn't her own. And so it was really hard to, you know, economically gain any freedom and manage yourself in the world, partly because, and there were lots of expectations to stay home that, you know, I remember a term, juvenile delinquent, were blamed on the mother being at work. You know, like if a woman would stay home, the child wouldn't be a juvenile delinquent. Sort of attitudes like that.
Yeah. You know, I kind of feel like Mad Men in some ways was almost ahead of its time, because I think the show ended slightly before you get the Me Too movement and Time's Up. But in the show,
right,
you know, I see it addressing a lot of these things that we're hearing about today. How would you say Mad Men compares to some of the other shows we've seen about working women, single women in recent years, such as the two that really stick out to me are Sex and the City and Girls, the two HBO series. How would you say it compares in terms of the portrayal of women?
Sex and the City is considered more of a post-feminist type of show, where the issues that Mad Men addresses that can be considered perennial are addressed, but it's more what we would call lifestyle feminism, where women have the choice to make their own money, buy their own shoes, sleep with anyone they want. So there are some themes of feminism in Sex and the City, but I don't think they address them quite as perennially as Mad Men does.
Well, this is Kim, and I watch Girls all the time. You know, I think there was a, generationally, there's a freedom, right, that Girls represented But, I mean, I think you could definitely see parallels between Jenna and Peggy, right? If they've been at a different time, they've both been pregnant. I mean, you know, they both made, you know, questionable choices at times, although, of course, Peggy was more in the workplace versus Hannah's personal life. But I think all these shows are important to understand women's roles, because so often when you look at pop culture, there's, you know, just a few stereotypes, right? The single woman, the married woman, the mother, those kinds of things. But what I think is great about Sex and the City and Girls is that there are another way of looking at different positions in life that women take. And what I think is great about Mad Men, of course, is how historically accurate it is, it was. And that those things are also important to understand how we got to where we are today.
And I would add to that, this is Tracy, that something that is really important about both Girls and Sex and the City is the way that they privilege women's relationships with each other and centralize those relationships. Mm-hmm. And of course, given the historical period that Mad Men is depicting, and this is part of my interest in the show, was that there was a lot of tension in the relationship between Joan and Peggy. And that, you know, in part was because, you know, they were in such a male-dominated space and competing for status and each going about it in her own way, that sort of tension was inevitable. And I appreciate that Mad Men, you know, was realistic about that. But I think it's also important to have these shows that do privilege women's relationships with each other outside of male-dominated spaces.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to UMES 30. Today's guest are Dr. Tracy Luke, Dr. Jane Marcellus, Dr. Erica Engstrom, and Dr. Kimberly Voss. And they've been here with us today discussing their 2014 book, Mad Men and Working Women. One of the things I'll say that actually bothered me about the show, and I was a fan of the show, especially early on, the first four seasons. I had all the DVDs for, I would use the show in a course I taught on America in the 1960s. But, you know, as a young black man, the thing that I didn't like about the show was, to me, it was this marginal treatment of African Americans and also, you know, other minority groups such as Latinas and queer women. So, and I know for some of my friends, that was the reason why they didn't watch the show. So I wanted to know how you all deal with this issue of race and diversity in the book.
This is Tracy. This is something that I wrote about in our book, and I absolutely agree with you. One of the things I was interested in was looking at how the show depicted race and otherness, and I would argue that the show did a pretty able job of representing Jewishness as a form of otherness and gave it a lot of a voice and what I would consider concrete treatment of that experience. And in contrast, when we see how blackness is portrayed, I mean, you know, the African-American characters on the show, you could argue, are primarily there as set pieces, almost to help develop the white characters. And they're not given, a thorough treatment. Their perspective is not examined. And I think that is an absolutely valid critique of the show.
Right. And then also, you know, I just want to add one last thing to this conversation before we move on. In terms of queer characters, I remember there was the gentleman, I think his name was Salvatore, who worked in the ad agency, and he had to leave the job because he feared being outed. But, you know, in terms of women, were there any dominant queer female characters on the show?
Well, I mean, didn't Peggy at one point, the photographer or artist?
Yes.
She's not a friend. There are friends. There are very secondary female characters. But we don't get to know them, really.
Alrighty. So before we run out of time, I want to make sure that you all get a chance to talk about some of the research and the projects you all have been working on individually. So if we could just take some time to do that. Dr. Luke, you could go first.
Sure. My first book was about a woman named Sylvia Porter, who created the genre of personal finance journalism as the first syndicated newspaper columnist writing about that topic. And So my primary research agenda is for women like that who have made significant contributions to journalism and mass media, but who have been left out of historical record. Most recently, I've been studying the history of women in radio and television in the Midwest. My next project will be about Amelia Bloomer, who is a temperance and women's rights advocate who founded The Lily, the first newspaper for women in the United States in 1849.
Okay, Dr. Marcellus?
Sure. Hi. Thank you for asking. My first book was Business Girls and Two Job Wives, Emerging Media Stereotypes of Employed Women. And it was about representation in magazines of employed women in the 1920s and 30s. I looked at Ladies' Home Journal, Forbes, other magazines like that, and I looked for stereotypes, the argument being that in that kind of place between women getting the vote in 1920 and World War II when we had Rosie the Riveter, actually quite a lot went on to kind of lay down stereotypes of employed women as different types of women, as I look a lot at secretaries, which I also used, you know, in the Mad Men book. So I looked at that. Lately, I've been working on women's suffrage. I live in Tennessee, which was the 36th state to ratify the 19th Amendment in 1920. So I've done some work on how the local papers here in Nashville covered that in 1920 and then earlier than 1920. And I'm also working on the other Mad Men book, actually. We had a Mad Men conference here in Tennessee in 2016, and I'm editing a book that came out of that. It's called The Legacy of Mad Men, Cultural History, Intermediality, and American Television, and that will be out in about a year.
Dr. Engstrom?
My first book had to do with the way that mass media portray weddings and brides. My latest book looks at the way that feminism is portrayed in the NBC comedy series Parks and Recreation. And I'm currently working on looking at how masculinity is being portrayed in television entertainment.
And Dr. Voss?
There's often a saying in history that well-behaved women seldom make history, and I'm working to make sure that's not true. my last two books have looked at those women in particular. Two books ago was Women Politicking Politely, which is a mix of club women, women's page journalists, other women in government who worked very hard behind the scenes and never got the credit for the really amazing things they did, creating a foundation in the 1950s and the 1960s, really for what happened in the 70s. My latest book is Reevaluating Women's Page Journalism in the Post-World War II Era. Nowadays, we have lifestyle or feature sections that used to be the women's pages. These women did amazing things, and they're really no part of any history, despite the amazing things they did in their individual communities across the country. I'm currently looking at fashion journalism through that lens.
Where can listeners find copies of your books that have been published already? And this is for everybody.
Amazon.
Amazon, Barnes & Nobles as well?
You got it.
Okay, right. So all the major booksellers. So listeners, you heard all of that. Please go out and support their work on Mad Men as well as all of these amazing other topics that they've worked on in the past and these new topics that they're working on for future publication. My final question for everybody, we're living in a really interesting time period as it relates to women. Obviously, this is Women's History Month, but just this time period in general, there's so much happening, whether you want to talk about the Me Too movement, Time's Up, the role of black women in the Black Lives Matter movement. You could talk about this revolution, this feminist revolution, some have called it, in pop culture with music, TV, film, social media. And then obviously in politics as well, you look at the record number of women elected to Congress in last year's midterm elections. And then also you have several female candidates who are going to be running for president in the upcoming 2020 election. Any final thoughts, ladies, just on all of these things that are happening right now?
Sure.
Go ahead, Erica.
I was going to say there's always been women in power. There's always been women doing great things. We just haven't had the access and the opportunities to create the messages such as the TV show. So the more women that we get behind the camera writing and actually producing these great works that have been around, the more we will be able to see women out there and women becoming superheroes and starring in Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel and being out there in the public eye and being known to be leaders. So it's just basically, women have always been around, we've always done great things, and now when we get the opportunities, we can do greater things.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we're living in a really interesting time where things are more out in the open. And, you know, in a way, Donald Trump, you can actually say he's out front with his sexism and his hatred. It's really hard not to see it. Mm. And maybe that empowers us all to speak up about our reality, as odd as that seems. it's a complex time. But, you know, I would say what Erica says, these issues have always been there. I think we're at a time when we're getting language around them. We're finding ways to speak up. And, like, Black Lives Matter, it's such a simple statement. How can this not be true? I mean, how can this not just, you know, say what is so obvious? And yet, it's now radical to say that. And so, we're living in a time when it's okay to say the obvious, that in a way we haven't been able to say it before.
Yeah, this is Tracy, and I agree with what my co-authors have said. And there is power in representation, there is power in discourse, there is power in naming these things. You know, I guess my hope for the future is that, you know, there are still real systemic problems related to gender, race, sexuality that need to be addressed. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing if we can go beyond talk and actually make some of these changes happen at the level of policy and in real material ways.
This is Kim, and as someone who looks very specifically at women in politics and in journalism in the 1950s and 60s, I keep looking at headlines and thinking, what would they have thought? And I think it would have been, this is great, this is amazing, why has it taken so long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, ladies, thank you all so much for joining me this morning. We're out of time, but this has been a very riveting conversation. So once again, thank you all so much, and congratulations on all your accomplishments, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that has piqued my interest. On March 2nd, I had the privilege of serving as a judge for the 2019 Maryland Eastern Shore Regional Spelling Bee, which featured 25 middle school age participants. The winner was Austin Rohr, a sixth grader from Salisbury Middle School. Austin will be competing against the best spellers from around the country in Washington, D.C. at the 92nd Scripps National Spelling Bee, which will be airing live on ESPN and ESPN2. On May 29th through the 31st. Great job, Austin, and good luck in May. We'll definitely be cheering for you. And that's our show for the week. Thanks again to our guests today. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and social media. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.